Session number 9956.
Michael Owen, Reel 1. Could you tell me the date and place of birth, please?
Newcastle on the 1st of March 1920.
And what was your father's profession?
He was a shipbroker and also a Territorial Army officer. He worked on the quayside, Newcastle, and his father was involved in coal mines.
And what sort of life did you lead in your first 5, 10 years? Give us an idea of the
Well,
certain things that you lived in.
we didn't know our parents so well because every holiday we were sent away to sea in the Considine Company ships. They had five ships, and we were sent to Spain, France, Finland, in these coal-burning ships. So we really didn't see much of our parents during the summer holidays.
How many were there
That
in the
were
family?
in the family. My eldest brother, he was captured at Dunkirk. He was a regular army officer. My youngest brother, he was in the RAF, VR, and he was shot down on his 40th and last bombing mission at the age of 21. Then, myself being in the Navy, my father couldn't keep out of the war whilst he commanded the 5th Battalion in the Great War, 5th Battalion Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, or Northumberland Fusiliers. He had to go back, so he came down in rank to Major, and he was involved with anti-aircraft on the East Coast. And then eventually he got out to Malta, and he was there during the Blitz in 1941-42, commanding an anti-aircraft regiment at St. Paul's Bay. And mother, she was in the Fennies, so the whole lot were away.
Now, your background, your early background, could be described as comfortable.
Yes, I would say so. Apart from what I said that we were sent away on our summer holidays, we were sent away to school in Windermere at the age of 10. The school eventually went bankrupt. I was kept on to 15, 1935. I then went to a school called Denston in Staffordshire, which I didn't like very much. In fact, one Sunday I ran away, but I ran back to school because I realized I'd get more hell from my father.
Why
So,
didn't you like Denson?
that was a very tough school at the time. And also, you had to get a chapel twice a day. I think the education was good, but there was a lot of bullying, as indeed in all public schools at that time before the last war.
Did you have any particular career in mind while you were going through your education?
Not at the time, no, but in 1937 I went to France to a shipbroker's office there at Nantes, and that settled my career to be in shipping. I had a year there, met some very, very interesting friends. Some of them were lost in the last war. This was really attending to ships that came into Nantes as a shipbroker. And then I had a year in Sweden in 1938, again in the shipbroking business and in the coal business in Gothenburg and also in Stockholm. So I speak French, not very well now, and Swedish.
What was your job in the office? What were your actual
Uh,
duties?
the, the sort of job was to go take documents down to the various ships, but I always remember one occasion when, as a young boy, I was told to go and identify a Polish seaman who'd unfortunately drowned in the River Loire, and the others didn't like the idea of the job. He jumped into the river, he was drunk, but he had a butterfly insignia on his arm. And so I was told to go along and do that, to do the identification, for which I was paid. But it was generally looking after the ships, doing documentation, reporting to the customs, etc.
The documentation would be related to cargo and permits.
Yes, cargo, permits, and also to take money over to the captain. I was a general dog's body. I was only 17 and a half, but I made a lot of very good friends.
Now, you were in Europe as 38, 39 came along.
Yes.
Did you watch the world situation at all? Were you aware of what was going on?
Yes, I was very much aware of it in Sweden, because I was working in Stockholm, and I must say I didn't like it. They were very, very pro-German in Stockholm, whereas they were extremely Anglophile in Gothenburg. So I made a plea that I could go to Gothenburg, Göteborg, which is called Little England in those days, I suppose it is now, and they were, it was chalk and cheese. They were very friendly.
How did the anti-English feel in manifest itself in Stockholm? What did they do that drew your attention to it?
Well, I was based in a flat, and I had lunch and dinner with Countess Horn of Amina, and she had four girls there, young girls. Well, I say young girls, they were 21. And I always remember on one occasion, it was the Munich crisis, when they said that I'd be frightened to go back to England, that sort of thing. It was, they were very, I suppose, extremely friendly with the Germans. They traded with Germany more in Stockholm.
Was it that they were verbally unpleasant?
I wouldn't say they were necessarily unpleasant. They were just pointed in their remarks. They traded, of course, with Germany in iron ore and that sort of thing. So that was.
Was there any question of physical aggression
No.
as the crisis grew?
No, never. The actual fact, the boss of the company, Olsen & Wright, that I worked with, he embezzled Red Cross funds during the war. He was the company was looking after the Red Cross in goods being sent to, I suppose, to Sweden and across to Germany. And I don't know whether he went to prison, but he was a right Nazi.
Now, you moved to Gothenburg.
Yes, which was very friendly.
And how long were you there before the war broke out?
Oh, it would be, I came back in, I think it would be about February 1939. But what had happened was in 1938, at 18, I had gone to Calliope, which was the Tyne Division RNVR, and I had asked to be admitted as a midshipman. But I explained to the, and it was accepted. And I explained that I would be in France for a year, not France, in Sweden for a year, because after I came back from France, I'd asked for this. And they, of course, when I came back, an awful lot of people of, I don't like the word my class, but were trying to get commissions. I had tried before in order to get a commission. Be it the Territorial Army or the RNVR, because they knew that there was going to be a war.
So your move here was to try and join the Royal Naval Volunteer Reserve as a midshipman.
That's right.
And get training, but you asked them to wait a year.
To wait a year, yes.
And because of the timing you'd done it, when you came back for the second time, back from
yes.
Sweden, you went straight in.
Well, I in fact, funnily enough, I reapplied, of course, I was told to. There was a new captain, and I received a notice to say that I had been rejected, and my father told me that I'd better join the army. Well, I refused to do that. I fought my own battle, and it so happened it was a mistake, so I was accepted as a midshipman. And then, of course, the next thing that happened was Gives arrived. I think it was £90, the Gives representative from Edinburgh.
Before we go into that, what had made you said you wanted to get involved. What made you go for the Navy? Was there any, was it because of your father's experiences in the First World War, or was it just you were attracted to the Navy because of your shipping profession?
Well, I think shipping profession and the fact that I had been at sea from the age of, I suppose, 10 years of age in the summer, and I was extremely interested in the people who took these ships to sea. They had a very hard time, and I liked the captains, and I liked the sea in general.
Now, when you applied for the first time to the Calliope, before
yes.
you went to Sweden, what sort of, did they put you through any sort of examination or investigation into your suitability?
Yes, we were, first of all, one of the things was we had to go to Scotswood Road, which is was a very rough part of Newcastle, to the swimming pool, and we were put into, I think it was an asbestos suit, and we had to do two or three times round the lengths, you know, to see if you could swim. We were interviewed by the commanding officer, and there was a staff officer, a regular RN staff officer, the RNVR commanding officer and the staff officer. And as I say, I was accepted.
What sort of interview was it about? What were the subjects?
I think, to be absolutely fair, it was what public school did you go to? Did you play cricket? What languages do you speak? It was very informal compared to what it is now.
Was there any examination to test your actual mental abilities?
No. You were asked what your certificates you had, but there was no actual examination. And if I may say now, without any line shoot, I have been the employer's representative for the Territorial Army Association. You're probably not aware of that. And as the employer's representative, I know that to get a commission in the Territorial Army, you have to do at least 18 months. And I have bitched about this because I don't think you're going to get as many potential officers as you might do. So it's totally different. Today, they are highly technical.
When you reapplied, when you came back from Sweden, were you reinvestigated in any way? Or
very much more so, because by then there were an awful lot of people trying to get in and to get commissions.
And what were they looking for this time?
Well, I suppose they were more selective, really. As I say, there were people wanting to get commissions who, because they knew there was going to be a war, but I had applied before, and I think on that basis they accepted me, as indeed there were about four or five of us.
Do you know the date you actually applied, you actually got in?
I would suggest it must, actually started work with the RNVR must have been about March 39.
And you say as soon as you were accepted, the Jeeves rep?
The Jeeves rep called. I suppose it was announced in the press. I don't know. I imagine so. Anyway, they were always on the doorstep with your doeskin suit, you know. And I think it was something that about £90 was a lot of money.
What kit did they sell you or supply for you?
A bum freezer, which was the sort of the small jacket for dinner, you know, mess dinner. The ordinary uniform, which is beautiful doeskin. And an overcoat, and I think I had to buy the dirk. I'm not sure, but it was only the same way as the wines and spirits with Siconian Speed, as you probably know. The Gives were the only people.
And what happened then? After how were you actually brought into the Navy from that?
Well, you went down on a, if I remember rightly, on a Monday. And a Monday night and on a Wednesday night down to Calliope, which is at Scotswood Road, and you did your training there. There was the gun room, which was exclusive, really. This ship, Calliope, was the Tyne Division RNVR training vessel. And at that stage, they did not have, as they have now, a sea tender. I used to command the thing at Spithead Review, etc., after the war. But they didn't have any sea tender. It was just you went out in the whaler for rowing. You were taught navigation. They had the gun room and they had the wardroom.
You went out in the whaler. What sort of things were you being taught there? I know it seems very simple.
I think you were taught to row and discipline, and you were taught naval manners, and you know what a quarter deck is, and what it splices, knots and splices, and that sort of thing.
Who would teach you?
They had a regular staff of petty officers, and they had the staff officer who would be a lieutenant commander, but they had a regular staff of petty officers who taught us.
The actual skills of seamanship, did you take to those readily after your...
Yes, indeed. Except I was absolutely... Being poor at mathematics, very poor, I wasn't very successful in navigation.
How did they go about trying to teach you navigation? Was it a simple level they were looking for? Or?
Yes. Star sights came on later on after I'd got into the... when war started. But fixes from the bridge, simple navigation, yes.
And you had trouble?
Well, only that I was absolutely no good at... I had no idea of sines, cosines and tangents at all, which, of course, was a primary... thing for taking star sights.
How did you overcome it? Were you crammed?
Not until I went to sea, and then they discovered how lousy I was at that, and of course I had to learn it up when I got onto East Coast Atlantic Convoy.
How did you? I'm curious. How did you manage to not give away your slight?
Well, I think one can shoot a line. Perhaps I don't know. I don't know, really.
What I'm angling for, did they actually check your progress in things like navigation by a series of tests or observations?
Not to my knowledge.
So as long as you appear to be...
That's right.
...going along all right.
I think that is so. It was generally so in before the last war, not now. Yes.
Was there... You said there was a gun room. What exactly...
Well, the gun room was exclusive to the midshipmen, to the... 18, I think, what was it, 21, 20, at the age of 20 you were made sub-lieutenant. So you were a midshipman, and there's a story attached to this I'll tell you later. You weren't allowed, you were not supposed to drink gin, you were only allowed beer, or you were no spirits at all, and you were a general dog's body. In fact, the lowest form of animal life, a midshipman was called, as you probably know.
You just come aboard for the night, then?
Yes, for the night, I think it was 6 o'clock until 10.
And
but you had dinner at probably 9.
So that's where you'd go to the gun room?
Yes. I think we had dinner, I think, in the wardroom. But I think we were in the gun room for drinking beer, or it was a separate place, but I can't recall ever having meals there. I do remember, though, that there was the Samoa dinner, which is a great dinner, that's commemorating the escape of the Calliope out in the Pacific in a big gale, a typhoon. And at that dinner, the German naval attaché, can't remember his name, but he appeared. He may have been assistant attaché, and he was the only officer survivor from the Bismarck, which was extraordinary. Can't remember his name there. But that dinner would have been held, I would imagine, in the old assembly rooms or somewhere, some place where there'd be not, I don't think, on board the ship.
So what would the nightly routine be? You'd come aboard at 6...
Come aboard at 6, you would have, we had to take physical exercises, you know. They had divisions where, of course, you reported to the captain. You were then taught your officer the watch duties, and the midshipmen were separate. You would either, as I say, go out in the whaler. You would be taught, as I say, navigation. You would be taught, for example, punishments and that sort of thing, general, what you would be required to do if you were in the RN.
And how long would this training period last? Would that go right up to 9 when you went into dinner?
Yes. Six and a half hours. About that, yes.
About two and a half hours.
Yes. There'd be a break. That would be it. Then, of course, on September the 1st.
Was the dinner that you had in the wardroom, was that a formal dinner to get used to the protocol of mess life? Or
to my recollection, that would be the dinner. There would be an official dinner probably once a month, I would say, where we were taught the routine.
How did you react to the protocol of the Navy, and if you could describe any of the parts that you remember of a mess, of a formal mess?
Oh, I think that it was damn good discipline. It was like any other mess, except that, of course, at the loyal test you don't stand up. I think it's like any other Army or Air Force mess.
So you found it a pleasant routine?
Oh, yes.
And you, at the time, did you realise it was a discipline building affair?
No, I didn't.
Did you kick against it at the time, or did you just accept it?
No, I accepted it. I had been in the officer training corps at Denston and had got my Cert A, so I think that helped a bit in that respect. And I think most of us, how many midshipmen would there be? Oh, 10, possibly, I would think. I think most of them had been in officer training corps, so, you know, they knew the routine.
Were you very conscious that you were training for war as opposed to... Because sometimes territorials, both Army and Navy, it's almost a social thing, I think.
I think you're right that it was. I think it was a social thing until, well, I, having been in a family who'd been at war, father having been at war, and being extremely interested in the Great War, and having a brother who was Territorial Army, yes, I think we did... I did realise that we were being trained for war, yes.
You went aboard once a week, I think.
Yes.
Did you have was the time for a camp?
Yes, exactly. There was. You were required to do 14 days at sea a year, or to go to a naval base. And that I didn't do. Well, because the war, I suppose, started on the 3rd of September.
On the Calais, besides the midshipmen, and what other personnel were coming in regularly for training of their RNVR?
Well, there was nobody else. Of course, well, there was paymasters, of course, doctors. Yes, exactly. Within the RNVR, you had the dentist, the toothy, you had the doctor. The paymaster, the electrician, he had the green stripe. They all had various stripes, as you know, in those days. They don't now. The paymaster was white, the electrician was green. Yes, they were trained in their own departments, the writers and the paymasters. Yes, they were trained as well.
Now, when you carried on with this, I presume, until war actually broke out.
Yes.
And were you expecting war to break out in September?
Yes, I think so. Oh, yes, most certainly. I was in the office on the quayside. There was another friend of mine, same age, who was in the RNVR, Suter. There was a Territorial Army man, Pinkney. He was killed. So I think we knew, yes, most certainly.
Do you remember anything about the actual day war broke out?
Yes, on Sunday, the 3rd. We lived in Gosforth here, and I remember 11 o'clock, of course, the alarm going, and after...
The air raid.
Air raid, yes, and then it stopped. Yes, I remember that well. And, of course, I was itching to get away, because at that time I hated the office.
You were working again.
I was working in the office on the quayside in Newcastle, and they had modern ideas in Sweden. They had neon lighting, for instance. They had They were far ahead of us, and we had this decrepit old office, and I was totally browned off. So I was, sorry to say it, but I was delighted when war started to get out of the office.
Do you think that was a common... I mean, obviously, people were in different circumstances from yourself, but was there much of an atmosphere of celebration when war broke out, or were you perhaps a little on your own there?
No, I think amongst my friends we were raring to go, and I think we were happy to go, to get out of that rotten routine, because there were barons on the quayside, you know. We were paid practically nothing. You were doing office boy work, and here we were as midshipmen with an opportunity to get out of it all.
What about your parents? They'd lived through a war already. What was their reaction? Because they realised you'd have to go and wanted to go. How did they react?
Oh, it was a question of you must go. I mean, there was no doubt about it. The old man said, right, good luck to you. I'm going, and Mother's going to be in the fannies, and you must go. And good luck.
Were they as enthusiastic as you were?
No, I don't think so. I think Father knew a lot about it. But then he was a military gentleman, tough as nails, you know.
What about your mother? She was
disturbed, yes. And, of course, she was terribly upset when my younger brother was killed on his last bombing mission. So that was that broke her heart. And my brother being a prisoner of war.
Now, when did you get to, you get a call up as an RNVR?
Yes, we used to go down to Calliope or ring up, and I don't think we went away, the midshipmen in the Calliope. I think there were three of us. I think a number of them were called up, and certainly the sub lieutenants lieutenant commanders, they were called up right away. Some of them before the war started. But I don't think we went away until about the 8th or 12th of September. And that was to King Alfred at Brighton.
Could you describe... You get down there. Could you describe the King Alfred, the layout of...
Oh, yes. It was a... I think it was a swimming pool, a leisure centre. You probably know it well. A leisure centre and garage, very big, which had been taken over by the Navy. And I and two others from Tyne Division were put into Sackville Court Hotel at Hove. And there were altogether, I think there were about 17 or 18 midshipmen who had come from various divisions, such as the Clyde Division, RNVR, Humber Division, etc. And they all arrived. And, of course, Peter Scott, you know, Sir Peter Scott as now, he was there as well. He was a great character on the stage. And Earl Beattie's son, and quite a number of very distinguished people, actually, who... We were, again, the lowest form of animal life, but and we were really pushed through in training.